This is Art Moves. Art Moves is a series of curated conversations at the intersection of art, innovation, and social justice.
Each week, we'll be talking with the innovative thinkers and doers who are forging new ground in the creative arts or redefining what it means to be creative.
I'm Tony Williams.
And I'm Eli Koslansky.
And we're your host for Art Moves. So today, we'll be talking to Kimmy Ukadike. Now, she is the program manager at iBeam. And Kimmy, we have so wanted to bring iBeam into this conversation because so much of what we want to talk about is the intersection between art and innovation and social justice. And your program is right at the crux of this. But as I was speaking to my co-host, I learned, because, you know, he doesn't always tell you everything, I learned that he was part of a group that conceived iBeam. Eli.
Yes, I think it's many years ago that when Seward Johnson and David Johnson and Roderick Richardson was thinking about iBeam, they put together a group of advisors in the field, and we were, you know, being that we were one of the pioneers in interactive media, they brought us in with a group of people to figure out, you know, what it should be, what kind of programs they should offer, et cetera, et cetera, and. It was really unique. I mean, there's nothing like it. Would you agree, Kimmy?
How long ago was that, Eli?
15 years, is that
15?
Right? Something like that.
So what is it that you're seeing now,
actually,
Kimmy?
Actually, like 23 years. Actually,
23.
Years.
Wow,
so he just didn't want us to know. Yeah. See, he didn't want us to know. That's why he did that. Right. He didn't want us to know. That's right.
Time flies. I mean, we were actually established in 1998. Mm-hmm. And as Eli said, with John Johnson and, you know, other thinkers, to sort of like, you know, address like society's shifting relationship to technology through the arts of, you know, through the lens of art, social justice and technology. And it's to sort of give a platform for artists at this intersection, you know, to have a space to do their work.
You know, so Kimmy, our show is all about art, innovation and social justice and the intersection. Talk to us about what that looks like from iBeam's perspective.
You know, it's really like hard to say if it's, you know, this is what it looks like because there are just so many projects. So you really have to look at it through the lens of the projects that we amplify at iBeam. What we hope to do is, and what we try to do and what we support is to provide a space for experimentation, you know, that uplifts these voices and these very creative, different projects.
Could you give some examples of ones that you would, I know it's tough, it's such a rich field of things to pick from, but is there some in particular to say, oh, this one's sort of a great example of like the intersection of these kind of...
Well, the Fractal Fellows program is a real good example of that. Can you share what that is and some of the projects that, you know, you think really are reflective of your premises?
Yeah, thanks for that. The Democracy Machine Fractal Fellowships is our current residency program. It's a 3-year program with 3 phases. Three-year program with like 4 phases where we're asking artists, we're tasking them to think about what does artist-led arts administration look like? How would you want to be administered? How would you go about picking, you know, cohorts of underrepresented artists, you know, artists in underrepresented communities, specifically Black artists, disabled artists, and Indigenous artists? In this cohort, the first cohort, we have 5 Fractal Fellows and 1 Creative Writing Fellow. And the concepts that they're thinking about is how can we have community-led practice, you know, as a way to pick and lead, you know, who's going to come through the next cohort. So this is one way where they're bringing their artistic sense and their technology experience. And even thinking of concepts like, you know, concepts in Web3 and decentralization, you know, to be used as a way of perhaps fundraising for the next cohort. So these are some of the ideas that have come through, fractal fellowships. We also have other fellowships. We have our digital day camp, which is our summer youth employment and summer youth program, where we, sort of teach young students, public high school students, about this intersection. Is usually themed in an effort to just sort of like create new technology leaders. You know, in addition to that, we have ECFJ, which is our journalism program that connects artists, technical artists, to like a major publication to speak about their work and to fund their work. Cohort-wise, or shall I say residence-wise, some of the interesting projects, I'm looking through, there are so many, some of the interesting projects include projects like Being 1.5, which was by Rashad Newsom. Mm-hmm. Last year, during the pandemic, we had a residency rapid response where we had over 30 artists and artist groups. And within that, you know, we had some spectacular projects. So with Rashad Newsom, he created an app, you know, for mental health and mental wellness, especially during the pandemic, when this was really so important.
I was thinking maybe we could take a step back, because a lot of people might not know or are familiar with iBeam, how it started, what the organization is about. Could you talk a little bit about its genesis? Because for me, it's always been curious that you have, you look at the foresight of somebody like the people who started, like Seward Johnson, who was an heir to Johnson & Johnson fortune, but also a traditional bronze sculptor who came up with this idea with two other people to do something where they combine art and technology. I thought that was kind of unique in a lot of ways and surprising. But could you talk a little bit about how the organization started, what kind of artists, you know, it looks for, and what kind of things that they do with the, you know, is it workshops? Is it mentoring?
Okay. Like you said earlier, we are 23 years old. We were established in 1998, really to just create a space, you know, for experimentation, you know, that really uplifts like this cultural conversation at this intersection that we've discussed. We have supported like makers and thinkers who have spearheaded game-changing projects like Reblog, which is the first ever online sharing protocol, and Fundraise, the first geocoding of public campaign finance data. We've also, supported projects such as a C-based creative coding platform called Open Frameworks, and the first rap lyricist database, the Rap Research Lab by Tahir Hempel. That's just like at the beginning of our work, or earlier on. Two decades later, plus, you know, we've had over 125 artists over rolled through IB, many of whom are pioneers in their field.
How do you select the artist? I mean, because when I think of art, again, you know, I'm just learning how what a practice it is. You know, the idea that you're merging art and technology, and the artist is using their ideas to just open up, you know, to create some out of the box thinking. So can you talk to us about how do you select the artists that you invest in?
It really depends on the residency program. You know, for example, you know, in this current residency program, we were looking for artists who really wanted to be in a collaborative environment, not really so much on their practice, but using the lens of their practice to think about, you know, how other artists can be supported. So in this particular program, we chose those who we felt really had a close connection to our call. With our last residency program, it was more of a response to surveillance capitalism and, you know, the pandemic and the social disruption at the time. and how artists were responding to that, you know, and the works that we felt, you know, could cover the spans, you know, of all these ideas that were happening at this time. So it's really, you know, residence and fellowship specific, you know, and, you know, we also try to have like representation from, you know, different social strata. Like when I say that, I mean, like there is no ageism, you know, we don't just pick young artists. I mean, I know some residency programs focus on young artists, but we actually just have a span of different artists that we pick from.
You're listening to Art Moves on WNYE 91.5 FM. And we're talking to Kimmy Ukadike from IB. We're talking about the intersection of art, technology, and social justice. Now, Kimmy, there was a police surveillance project that you've spoken to me about previously. Would you care to share that with our audience, our listening audience? What was that? Because when I think of art again, you know, a police surveillance app, that's something I find really interesting because I might not have made that connection.
Oh, thanks. Well, this was made by one of our alumni, Kyle McDonald. And he, you know, researched the intersection of face analysis and policing. You know, when you think about it, the American police have been running face recognition on surveillance cameras for like 20 years. And while there have been many investigations into this, you know, today's advances in machine learning, you know, can be used, you know, to estimate everything from age to facial expressions to race and gender. So he was basically using these tools to see if, you know, the public spaces that are being monitored, you know, if he can sort of like detect, you know, and really just refine, you know, what does that, you know, look like and, you know, sort of like analyze that, you know, and bring it to their faces in short that, hey, we know this is how you're using it.
Yeah, I'm very familiar with his work. You know, it's interesting because Disney and I think stadiums use that to find, in quote, troublemakers, you know what I mean? But, you know, I was listening to what you were saying about the programs. And I was wondering, you know, I'm trying to get a sense, like, you know, if you're an artist, you come into the space, come into the facility and stuff, what do they offer? They offer tools, workspace, mentorship, high-speed compute, you know, fabrication stuff, you know, just to get a sort of a picture of, like, what it's like to be there. Best way to ask that.
We offer a lot. I mean, you know, right now we are going digital first. So we are not able to offer, you know, fabrication, you know, space or anything for physical computing at this time because we are working as a digital first company. You know, we offer two sets of support. We have like a membership based set of support for a program that we're calling The Fold. It's a new initiative where we have monthly or semi-monthly sessions about, you know, issues that are affecting, you know, today's society, such as, you know, like Web3 and navigating through that space or, you know, accessibility, you know, in digital media studies. But to our artists in our residency programs, we offer mentorship. We offer workshops. We offer professional development on different levels. We have a program advisors for them. And just general support in other ways that they request. We ask them to request, how can we help you? What resources do you need to succeed in your program? You know, and in my role as manager of programs and inclusion, that's the first question I ask. I'm like, how can I support you? You know, I task them to make a list of their needs. You know, through that, you know, I look for resources, whether it's, you know, looking for a person to help them develop a certain skill, or it could be that they may need to speak with an expert. For example, when I said Rashad's Newsom project dealt with mental health, at one point I asked him, do you need to speak with Black psychologists, you know, to be able to decipher what these tools that you can use, you know, in your app. So these are the kinds of support that we give artists who are fellows or residents at Ivy.
So I remember reading on the website that you all foster radical change agents. And so what is, talk to us about that.
Well, like I said, like fractal fellowships, when you look at it, we're asking artists to create a model of how they, want to be, administered. What is working for them? What is not working for them? For example, a lot of artists feel that, the selection process is biased, and
there's like that a little bit. Why do they think it's biased?
Because sometimes, the same people roll through different residencies over and over again because they're quote unquote stars, right? But what about other, residents that may be doing work that is just as good, but, maybe they don't have, that visibility, so these are some of the ideas and some of the thinking, the schemes that our residents are like thinking through. How do you circumvent that? And they're having ideas. Maybe they need to, do more outreach to organizations that specifically deal with Black, Indigenous, and disabled artists and look within those organizations as opposed to having an open call where, you're going by the visibility of someone because they've done all this wonderful work, but then you end up seeing the same person's name on every project that has funding.
You know, another area that I found really provocative about what you all do or what you all say that you can do has to do with shaping social policy. So how do these ideas, or can you give us an example of how one of these ideas helped to shape social policy? Because to me, that's an incredible output.
I would add also, do you track the impact of that somehow? Is there some feedback loop?
Absolutely.
I'd say that, we have connections, through our funding, to places like the Ford Foundation, and other organizations that, do have that space, to push social policy. I just want to go back to our present fellowship. What we're asking them is to write a document, and not just a document, but to create documentation, whether it's audio, visual, web-based, some kind of documentation about their process, what they've learned, the mistakes, pitfalls, how they want to move forward, what has held them back. And we're hoping that we can share this with policymakers to affect the way, like monies are being distributed to these artists in the future.
One thing you mentioned was curious. You mentioned something about having as one of the advisors a psychologist or something, which I think is kind of interesting because, people always want to change behaviors, but why is there not a behaviorist in it? So how does that person or artist work with a psychologist? What kind of things?
That was the mental health app, I think.
The mental health app, right?
Yes.
And how you wanted to connect this person to Black psychiatrists.
To help them develop, how the app should be used, whether it's with affirmations, physical therapy, what works for Black people, what therapies work. So during his residency at IBM, I thought that would be a good path.
Yeah, there's something compelling about that, especially people want to affect society, but then, in some level it comes down to what people's personal actions and behaviors are. So that's why I thought that was intriguing.
You're listening to Art Moves on WNYE 91.5 FM. Today, we're here with Kimmy Ukadike from IB. So, Eli, pick it up from where you left off.
Yeah, with a name like Kislansky, I can appreciate it. I was just, one of the things I was always challenging for funding organization is, there's a lot of anecdotal data about how their money is being spent, what impact it has in society. I think one of the intriguing fields of study, I think, at IBEAN is data to a certain extent. I think, is that accurate? Would you say it's accurate? The use of data and visualization and how it works in projects, or is that not the case?
I guess it's we don't collect data in that sense. We're anti-collection of data in that sense from our artists. You know, we're even trying to move away, you know, from data collecting apps. You know, through one of our new initiatives, we're moving towards using like a suite of apps that do not collect data, because our residents from Rapid Response, we used like Google Suite to project manage Rapid Response, which we learned was a mistake, you know, in the sense that a lot of the fellows felt like if you have a, you know, like a fellowship that deals with exiting surveillance capitalism, how are you going to use Google to manage us? You know, so from there, we decided, okay, let's think about how we can move to other platforms. So because of that, we're now, our fellows are now working in this platform called Underscore, which is by an independent, you know, I would say nonprofit in Berlin that has created like an enterprise level suite of applications that do not collect data and are off like, you know, that grid. So for example, instead of using YouTube for our video, we use PeerTube when we're working through that, not without any kinks, but, you know, we're making the move to that platform.
Yeah, one of the things that we talked about originally when we were thinking about iBeam is this idea about dealing, how do you deal with intellectual property? And, you know, we always thought that in some ways there should be like a technology transfer program, which I don't know if that ever happened or not, but interesting you could talk about. How does iBeam deal with, I mean, I assume that the artists maintain their own intellectual property. Is there something in their mentoring of how to get it out into the field somehow or monetize it?
Well, we don't have like we don't claim intellectual property for our artists. Yes, they have their own intellectual property. We do offer like, you know, workshops, you know, we have offered workshops and we do offer workshops like with Rapid Response. This issue came up a lot. So we brought in a lawyer to help, you know, the artists work through, you know, what does intellectual property look like for a technology project. So we do offer like some kind of professional development for the artists that need that.
But is that a case-by-case basis or is it part of the process or mentoring? Or the reason I'm asked, because many years ago I was on a board for Columbia University's Center for Advanced Technology, and they had a whole process. And well, of course, that's a much bigger thing, but it seems to me that there would be an interesting way for the iBeam to be able to, you know, have his programs live beyond just the, you know, periods that, that artists spend their residency.
Well, that's a good idea. It's really on a case-by-case basis because remember, you know, we ask artists what resources they need. Some artists may already have, you know, like a good handle on intellectual property for their whatever they're making. And some may have no idea how to go about this. So that's why we ask, you know, and then from these asks, then we produce workshops and source leaders for these workshops.
You know, so Kimmy, you know, I'm listening to you and you're so fascinating. Could you talk to us a little bit about you? How did you get to iBeam and what's your background?
Let's see.
Surprise.
Surprise. Right now I'm the manager of programs and inclusion at iBeam, but I started at iBeam as a project manager for just one residency, which is Rapid Response. That was, you know, when the pandemic started. Before then, I worked at Lincoln Center for the Performing Arts as their 2020 Digital Accessibility Fellow. Prior to that, I recently got my my graduate degree from the ITP program, Interactive Telecommunications Program at NYU. Prior to that, I have like over 20 years as a manager and producer for media websites. And these websites have been in places like Nigeria and over here in the US for media companies such as the New York Times, CBS, PBS, American Express Publishing with Food and Wine Magazine and Travel and Leisure, as well as Newsday newspaper. My practice, I see myself as someone that is really into supporting creative technology. I'm working on a website to propagate African makers. I also was a 2021 teaching fellow at Processing Foundation, where I've been working on developing my digital accessibility syllabus, which is intended to be an open source syllabus for university level students and other media practitioners, I mean, interactive media practitioners that are wanting to know how to make their digital products accessible to people of all audiences.
Oh, that is incredible. You know, digital accessibility. That's why I wanted you to speak about that, because that was not a career path that I knew even existed. Perhaps Eli knows because he's in that space, but that's not something that I was aware of.
Well, it's a big challenge because there's the digital divide that always people are trying to close.
Right.
So have an open platform like that, you know, affords accessibility to it is, you know, really in some ways you could say it's a game changer.
Excellent. Now, you did at the top of the show, you talked about a summer youth program. Can you elaborate on that? Because there are probably many, many people out there, young people out there that are looking for their next move or, you know, their talent, trying to find themselves, so to speak. Talk to us about your summer youth program.
Well, it's called Digital Day Camp. It's for, rising freshmen to seniors that are about to enter into college, high school students. So you would say like from ages to 14 to 18, roughly, is intended for public school students, hoping that the audience that we attract would be these students that are getting free lunch, because that demographic, you know, we feel can really benefit from learning about arts and technology. Each year we have a different theme. Our hope for this year, the theme that we're going with is, and you guys will probably be the first to know this, it's, accessible smart cities and the digital twin. And here we wanna, look at a space in the city and ask and task these high school students to prototype that space to be more accessible. And in doing so, you know, teaching them skills from 3D printing to sound, using sound as an accessible tool to digital accessibility as a whole, and bringing in leaders in the field to teach the students how to think this way.
Well, I think we have a smart city expert sitting right here next to me. What did you think about what Kimmy just said?
No, it's fascinating.
It's so funny how ask a question and something, some nugget is there.
Yeah.
Speak about that.
You know, one of the things that we work on, this thing we call legible cities. And there's this cadre of maverick urban designers, if you will, who looks at the smart city models and realize that so much of it is focused on infrastructure, hard infrastructure like lighting, garbage, things like that. But as we know from Jane Jacobson, the city is more than just its infrastructure. It's also the people and culture and knowledge. And that's a dimension of smart cities that's missing, and a dimension that really it needs to make it work. So our contention is a role for cultural organizations such as iBeam and museums and such to play in the smart city models by making cities more legible. Anyways.
So, Kimmy, this was wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us. You have been so informative.
Art Moves is co-produced by Brick Arts Media and pre-recorded at Brick Studio in downtown Brooklyn.
This has been Art Moves with your hosts, Tony Williams and Eli Kuslansky. Find some art that moves you and share it with someone.